Podcast, episode 188. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Yeehaw!
Graham Thickens. And Phil Wilson.
Hello.
Did we lose Graham there for a minute?
I was on mute. You didn't get to hear what I said. I said, that gets me going.
All right.
Gets him going, he's gone.
Well, we just
pretend. Country bluesy thing.
Yeah, we just pretended that we heard everything you said.
Have you abandoned the plan of the theme music?
I did because you guys chastised me so dramatically.
Well, mainly because the theme music you chose sucks so bad. But other than that,
hey, Mr. Radio Boy, I'm totally open to anything you want to do.
I like the idea of having a different song every week. It reminds me of podcasting from days gone by.
Days gone by.
From the original podcast. Remember that? They would always like play songs, different theme songs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Way back in the day.
Variety is good.
Yep.
But so, 80s music still rules, right, Phil?
Yeah.
tell us what happened at Word Up. You guys both went, both you and Phil. Tim?
Well, I was there for most of the day. I got there for the second session, but it was always good to see everybody. That you know, the WordPress multitude. We had a great time at MCTC, right? Minneapolis Community Tech College, which is a great facility. Man, I had no idea how big that campus was. My gosh.
Kind of right up Loring Park there, right?
Yeah, it is gorgeous, and led to some nice lunch, that's for sure. So, we really spent a lot of time just kind of getting up to date on, custom themes and plugins, and Tim's presentation was in the afternoon, which covered responsive themes and mobile, that sort of thing. Just basically how to best display your WordPress blog or website via mobile.
Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah. I spent a little too much time in the ye old repair shop simply because I had some problems with some malware, and it led me to miss Tim's event. But Tim took a rather long route to the and painful.
Yeah. I had an accident the night before and really messed my back up. So
oh no.
So I didn't arrive until just before my talk in the afternoon.
And he looked great. I mean, he was sort of loaded up on Advil. But you looked great.
Well.
Could you bend over, though?
I could not bend over. I could walk, which was good. But getting out of the car was an experience.
Well, fortunately, there's not a lot of heavy lifting in WordPress development. So,
yeah.
or presentations. So
I put it on a thumb drive, and that's all I had was my thumb drive with my talk on it. So
you could barely lift it.
That's right. Light. That's right. Yeah.
Nice. So,
8 gig thumb drive.
That was well, hey,
how
fun.
How you feeling now? You feeling okay now?
Yeah. No, I'm better. Okay. I kind of bruised things up, and yeah, it was early in the week. It wasn't good, but now it's better.
Fall off a ladder, cleaning leaves out of the gutter, or how?
No. Slipped down the stairs.
It was stairs are bad. Yeah,
grapefruit juice.
That's not good.
Yeah.
Well, hey, fun facts to know and tell. Anyone doing a presentation? Because I've run into this now 3 times in the last month, where I've done, I've had a thumb drive and I've had my keynote presentation on it, a PowerPoint version, and I've exported it to PDF because you can go full screen with PDF, and yeah, you lose all your transitions and so on. But it's amazing to me the difference in projectors that people have, where you walk in and somebody says, we just have this analog projector, so it's VGA out, or we just have DVI, or now... Well, do you have an HDMI connector? So it's like, oh my God. So use Disk Utility and I create a FAT32 flash drive. I just format it as FAT32 so it'll work on a Mac and a PC. And then dump those 3 versions on there and you're golden.
Yeah. Huh. And I put another one up in Google Docs too.
Oh, good plan.
Or Google Drive, as they call it.
Google Drive, right.
So I always have a Google Drive back fallback position.
Yeah.
Good idea. Yeah.
So how was the event overall, though? I mean, what other kinds of sessions and so on?
Seemed good. Yeah. I didn't get to see any other sessions, but from talking to people afterward, they said it was great. There were about 100 people there, I think, something like that.
Yeah. It was an intimate space, let's just say, but it was very nice. We had a great time. Toby Crins and the gang over at Minneapolis or Minneapolis St. Paul WordPress Users Group. Yeah. Not exactly a streamlined title, but it was a great event.
That's great.
Speaking of presentations, I wanted to hark back to what I heard about Mini Demo in Rochester.
Oh, yeah. Can you tell about it? Because we didn't have a chance to see that.
I picked up on a lot of scuttlebutt this last week. I was at St. Thomas yesterday for that Fowler Business Concept Challenge. And I talked with one presenter a couple days earlier and found out what Mini Demo was like. But the one I talked to, Brianna Fisher of Do Drinks, went first. And she was the only one that could do an actual demo. Because she brought her MiFi card.
Oh, no.
The Wi-Fi tanked out on them there. And nobody could do a demo except her. And so they were all fumbling for PowerPoint.
What a drag.
Or up there talking with their hands about, well, here's what my thing does. Or, I don't know what happened. But anyway, that was unfortunate. Otherwise, it was a good success. And I guess the young kid who organized it had never even been to a mini demo before. Bucky Beeman, I think, was his name or something like that. But Ben Edwards told me they had about 130 people crammed into that unfinished basement or whatever it was. And about 30 of them were from the Twin Cities. And I guess it was, it was still a successful event. But, more folks could have maybe brought a backup plan with a MiFi.
Right. Yeah.
Well, live and learn.
Well, I'm surprised that more people don't do the thing on their phones. Like Phil and I both have the ability to
tether
ad hoc hotspots.
Yeah.
Oh, well, so why didn't she share her MiFi?
Yeah.
I wonder.
That seemed a little,
Have asked her to use her MiFi. She never explained that to me. But and why wouldn't she? She's a generous person. Why wouldn't she just have offered it up? Maybe it ran out of juice, and I don't know.
You can plug those in. They last for like 4 or 5 hours, but they haven't powered before.
I've never had one last more than a couple hours.
Listen to us.
Oh, really? Oh,
okay. We weren't even there, for gosh sakes.
I know. Circumstances were.
Sounds a little fishy to me.
There was probably a legitimate explanation.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about our boys at SmartThings who won the Spark of Genius contest at the Dublin Web Summit. Did you see what the prize money was? They won 100,000 euros, which is 130,000 US.
Like they need more money.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's they've got to buy new cars or something, right?
Well, with that Kickstarter money, yeah, they got to go on vacations to, the Caribbean. And
yeah, well, I'll be surprised that, I mean, this is, what a coup to win that dough.
These guys are getting a lot of publicity,
They're doing well, yeah.
Well, I've been upgrading my Kickstarter pledge, so now I'm up to like $240. So I'm waiting for my stuff in December to arrive, and I'll give everybody an overview of the technology and how it works and so forth.
I was just kind of checking we get a lot of updates from the SmartThings folks on Kickstarter, but I haven't felt any concern that they're not going to meet their delivery deadline. Whereas the Pebble Kickstarter project, which I pledged for or participated in, I just don't know when the hell they're going to get this watch delivered. Because every update is, we began injection molding today, and it's like, oh my god, you're still like months away from shipping a product.
You won't see that until next year.
No, you won't.
What's going to be funny is that Apple will probably have a product on the market before you get yours.
Probably. Oh.
Wouldn't that be something? Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be one of the things announced next week.
No, a watch? Yeah.
Yeah, no, it'll be like a wearable thing.
Well, they've already got, you know, the was it the Shuffle or the Nano?
The Nano they made to look like a, actually it looks like a Windows 8 phone, but it looks more like a small iPhone now, and it's not wearable. The previous generation was the little square one people wore as a watch.
Right.
So, you know, speculation is that they're going to do something in the wearable space that they haven't retreated.
That you really think that there's, that can't be part of the announcement next
no,
week?
No, I don't think.
No.
It would be great if it was, though. Wouldn't that be this awesome?
Yeah. Well, they're going to have a lot to announce at this event, though, from what I'm reading.
Well, Tim Cook said that they had a bunch of cool stuff.
Yeah.
So that would be cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's multiple products going to be.
Yeah, they've got Steve's next laptop, the 13-inch MacBook Pro with Retina screen.
No, it's just that they're going to replace the 27-inch iMac that I just bought.
Yeah.
With something awesome.
With Retina screen.
Yeah.
Can you imagine a 27-inch Retina screen?
No, I can't. Well, actually, there was a great argument against that on Ars Technica about all the technical reasons why that would just be not possible right now. Just be too expensive.
Maybe they'll do a 20-inch model, though.
Yeah, I don't know.
19.
You know, I will tell you that this is one thing that's interesting with Retina display stuff. So I noticed it first on the iPad. You know, people were talking about designing for the new Retina iPad. And I looked at logos, Ping images that I'd created for sites, and they just looked fuzzy and like crap. And so I ended up redoing the logos as 300 DPI Ping images. And of course they're bigger, not dramatically. So maybe another, you know, 150K. But the images just, I mean, the graphics just look really, really bad. So what I'm wondering about is what ever happened to SVG support, you know, the scalable vector graphics. You remember how that was just going to be the thing where it could be any size and would be crisp resolution and so forth? That just never happened. And there are tools to turn graphics into SVGs. And all these modern browsers support it, but where it just kind of never happened. And I'm wondering if that would take care of it. Cause you know, with all these Retina displays, most of the current design is going to look pretty bad.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You'll have to do two sets of images for everything.
Oof.
You know what I mean? For the entire site, which is, it's a huge problem.
Well, it's going to suck up a lot of bandwidth, especially when people are mobile.
Yeah.
Oh God. Yeah.
Yeah. But responsive design you already have these problems. I mean, we're already doing this now where, we basically create three, at least two, but many times three sets of images, one for the desktop, you know, for the regular browser, one for tablet, and another set for phones.
Right.
And, you know, there's tools that you can use, but if you're really doing it, if you're really optimizing for the phone, you need a separate set of images. And there's some ways you can do that on the fly, but it still creates a lot more work. So, you know, adding yet another resolution for Retina is just going to be another problem.
Well, a lot of the themes, for example, for WordPress, automatically, if they're responsive, automatically are set up to create multiple images. But they run it through the WordPress process, which is only, I think, 85%. So it's considered high as a web output. So it still looks really bad, unfortunately. Yep. But
these are first world problems. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, tell me about it. Yeah, I know. Well, so what's the I just read a little bit about this whole Coursera dust up about the Minnesota saying this free online course organization couldn't offer their stuff here in the state.
It basically just points out to some out of date legislation that hadn't been addressed because of, you know, to conform to new technical and new opportunities made available through the web. So I looked at that story and I kind of like, Big deal.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah, I thought I was sort of outraged there for a while, but.
Well, yeah.
But then Julio came up with a well balanced piece, you know, measured, kind of went through the whole thing.
Yeah, it was very good. It was very good. Yeah.
Yeah. So you should put in the show notes, you should put Julio's piece and the Slate one where the headline is "Free Online Education is Now Illegal in Minnesota."
Yeah. I'll put them both in there.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it just shows that many of the laws that we have not been upgraded or updated to the internet age. So.
Oh, yeah. How many out of date laws there are in the books, kids? I mean, come on. Geez.
Yeah. So, well, right. But you know, I've been amazed by
probably still some things where you can't tie your horse in places. So, you know.
Oh, sure there are. Well, and what I've been amazed by is I've downloaded a bunch of courses at iTunes U, which is the essentially the newsstand for courseware. Mm-hmm. And there's
until yesterday you were breaking the Minnesota law.
Oh my God. Well, anyway, and so I downloaded this Open Yale course on astronomy. And I started going through it, and the only part that I skipped was about calculating retrograde orbits. I did that when I was at the U, and it's like, I'm not doing that again. But the videos were awesome, and some of the newest data was awesome. And then there was a course on Creative Commons rights, remixes, and respect, which was really fascinating because it really talked to fair use and the kinds of things you can and cannot do and why you want to use these certain licenses and all that. And I thought, oh my God. So when I went out to Seattle this past weekend for this wedding that we went to, and I have another comment about Seattle, but I read this or went through this Creative Commons course, and it was free. And oh my God, did I learn a lot. And so there's all of these courses that are available for free. And so when this story hit, unfortunately, I didn't have time to really go through it in any depth. But I thought, you know what? I'm sorry, Minnesota. We've got to get on the stick here and really embrace this trend, because this is what's happening.
Well, can you imagine if education was sort of revolutionized, where the best lecturer of whatever subject would, you know, be available, you know, for everyone to see? You know, you'd have a video of the best person that could possibly be for a subject. And then, you know, you'd have some local stuff where you'd have regular professors teaching in a different way and not necessarily lecturing as many do today. I think that would just be, that would really change the game, I think, for higher education.
Well, my favorite guy is a guy named Dr. Tay, and I'll put a link in the show notes. But he's done TED Talks, and he's got this video called Building a New Culture of Teaching and Learning, and it's about skateboarding, and it's about how the current model of education doesn't work. Because, you know, when you think about skateboarding and learning a trick, he goes through this whole thing about how many attempts he had to make before he nailed the trick. And he said, you know, in the current education model, you learn, and then you take a test and you either pass or fail. And that's it. But in the real world, if you're playing a video game, if you're learning how to use Photoshop, if you're doing anything, you're failing, learning a little bit, failing, learning. Then you hit it, and then you keep doing it until you master that skill. And so, to your point, Tim, yeah, we've got to flip the thing upside down.
Yeah, there's many structural reasons why that won't happen quickly, but
right.
All the technology is out there. And to the credit of Stanford and, you know, a lot of other universities that are part of the system, there's just a lot of great courseware out there for free, whether it's on iTunes U or elsewhere.
Right.
So what I've taken from this, Steve, is I'm trying to figure out exactly, when do you sleep? You're taking these courses, you're...
Well, learning is one of... If I'm not learning something all the time, I go just insane. That's why I love... You know, and it's funny because we're going to talk about this later, but, you know, the whole future of journalism thing and about news apps, I'm just a news junkie We'll get into that later, but it's that's why I love the iPad, because this thing is just like the perfect
news junkie.
Oh God, is it ever? Is it ever?
Well, you know, and the iPad's going to have competition from our very own Best Buy.
I know.
Yeah,
so I was going to say. Speaking of the iPad,
nice segue, Phil.
Oh yeah.
That's how it's done, bitch.
The big leagues.
You're okay, Phil. I don't care what your wife says about you.
What's interesting about this Insignia Flex thing was that they announced it like a week ago on their Facebook page.
Yeah, and Robert Stevens tweeted it.
Yeah. But they didn't give any details. So what happened was they sort of manufactured this whole thing where people were making stuff up, including Reuters, who came up with the price point where it would be somewhere between $240 and $260. And that's probably just based on the competitive landscape.
Yeah.
That would be $250 then.
Yeah. It'll probably be
$249.99.
I'll bet you. Yeah. Oh, okay. 95.
It's a 10-inch ice cream sandwich running Android tablet. You know, so it may have a place in the market. I'm not sure. But, you know, one thing that they could do, which they haven't really explained, is if this is running, you know, this plain vanilla Android, they could get a lot of geeks onto this, especially if it could be upgraded easily.
Well, there's that. But also remember that Robert Stevens had told us on one of our podcasts that when we were talking about the stores and all that, that there was you know, kind of a move afoot to do shelf talkers that were tablets or actually give a tablet to all the blue shirts.
Yeah.
So that, cause he said he didn't want to ever hear again. I don't know. He wanted people to say, I'll find out.
Let's look it up.
Yep. Yeah. Cause I can't tell you how many times I go in there. I went in to ask about one particular Wi-Fi router because I had to do a specific kind of port forwarding. And I know this is a little esoteric, but even the basic questions the guy couldn't answer about these Cisco routers. And I said, well, let's look it up. And I grabbed my phone and I start looking it up and I go through the whole thing and we found the answer and it was in the specs. And I thought, oh, boy, if this guy had had a tablet, and he said, you know, I don't know, but let's look it up right now. And boom, he's there, and he's looking it up, and he's going through the specs. He would have found that information and told me. And that's what I expect.
And then you would ask, how much is it on Amazon, by the way? Could you take
a look? Yeah.
And will you match that?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what they're going to do. So is Target. I'm sure you guys saw that, right?
Yeah, but so many of their models of the same versions of things are they're different model numbers. So they're out is always, well, this isn't the same model. This isn't
true.
The same thing.
True.
So.
Yeah, but you know, it's well, okay. I guess that's
we'll see what happens.
Valid.
I think the whole price matching concept is just a little bit too nebulous to really be effective. So you know, they're putting a lot of different caveats on the price matching. And I think if you're going to do it, you got to do it. And if you're not going to do it, don't do it.
So, yeah.
Well, the problem they've had is that people have reverse engineered the price matching, you know, these quote extreme couponer type people. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they do all this promotion and price matching as part of that to get people in the store. And hopefully they buy more than just the stuff on sale. And for a lot of people, that didn't translate. We would just wait in line for on Black Friday and go in and buy all the deals and then leave.
Right.
Which they're not making a lot of money on that, if at all.
And I am just, you know, I'm tired of the whole Black Friday thing. I mean, it's just, Black Friday is now going to start on Tuesday.
Well, I know, but it's fun. It's sometimes fun.
I surprise.
I don't do it, but
that's right. It's good to get $100 off Apple stuff one day a year.
Yeah.
One day a year.
I think this is a really good move for Best Buy to do this, to move forward on this.
Yeah. Because it's coming. That's on the heels of the Microsoft finally coming out with the details on their Surface tablet,
and their pricing.
And I look at that pricing and I think, no, this isn't enough, guys. It's just not enough. It's not.
Well,
I don't think they're in the right ballpark, especially at that $499 price and then having to add another $100 on for the you know, revolutionary keyboard, which is really the big, you know, the big point of differentiation. They need to include that in the price.
Well, here's the thing though, is I've been working on a couple of huge projects, and obviously everybody's on Windows, and I've been getting these databases that include pivot tables, and I can't read them on the Mac side with Mac Office. And so I fire up Parallels and I subscribe to the Windows or the Microsoft Office 2013 beta. And I've been using that because I can open up anything then. And those are the sorts of things that I think are going to click with people, is when they say, we can use a Surface tablet. And oh, by the way, it's going to read Visual Basic and it'll read pivot tables and spreadsheets. And that'll be huge with finance groups and anybody that needs to use this stuff. And Microsoft will be able to tie it into all of their enterprise resource planning software and, you know, Microsoft Server and all of that. Now, whether that is going to really resonate and be a great strategy, I don't know. I don't know how effective that's going to be, but I'll tell you, for the enterprise, I think it's going to mean a lot.
Mm-hmm. It does.
Well, I think that Microsoft is really kind of placing their bets here. And Surface is, you know, a consumer product, and the value proposition is different than the iPad. It's, hey, instead of buying a laptop, buy this thing.
Right.
You know,
right.
Because you get Microsoft Office that runs just like it does on a laptop on a tablet, which you can't get on the iPad or Android. So it's got a unique thing, and so the pricing at being the same as the iPad for a premium product, I think, is okay. But the problem that they're going to have is that all of their OEMs that are licensing Windows for laptops are going to be super pissed. So I would say that we're going to see a backlash next year, where you're going to see, you know, Samsung and Sony and, you know, a lot of these big OEMs just kind of turn their back and go in a different direction, away from Microsoft, which long term is going to be a problem for them.
Huh.
Well, none of it all matters, according to Mark Benioff. He said, you know, Windows is done. It's irrelevant. No, he came out at CloudForce. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. So there's your answer, guys.
No, I think he's right. But it's going to take a while.
Yeah.
I mean, for one thing, I think that Windows XP showed everybody that, you know, the enterprise is perfectly happy with 10-year-old software running in production. So you're going to see Windows 7 for the next, you know, 8 or 10 years. In the enterprise. So they're going to be fine from a licensing standpoint for a long time. So they've got, I'd say, the next 4 or 5 years, 6 years, something like that, to really try to do something in the consumer space. And to date, the Xbox is the only thing that's been successful. So,
yeah.
You know, and that hasn't been a huge, well, I guess now it's a moneymaker, but I mean, they invested billions of dollars in that thing and it lost lots of money for a long time. Mm-hmm. And there's no guarantee that they're going to continue to be successful in the next generation of consoles either. So I'd say this Surface thing is a huge bet. And if they don't pull it off, it's not going to be good for the company. They're going to go through a RIM style restructuring.
Well, that's my biggest concern about, you know, it just seems like they keep stepping on their Johnson's here trying to get this thing stuff, all this, you know, between the, you know, the Windows 8 upgrade and the Surface and all of this stuff. It's just like, come on, guys, get it together.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
they don't have strong leadership. Right. You know, you could go back and see, you know, Bill Gates, you know, like him or not, he made lots of decisions, and he was the guy that in that Steve Jobsian sort of role that just said, we're going to do this. And, you know, Ballmer is not that guy. So I think everything is done by committee there. And you've got like lots of fiefdoms within the company. And it's just a mess.
No question. Well, you know, what's interesting about that is, do you remember that Jobs said that one of the death knells of companies is when salespeople take over? But so that actually people are looking at that quote, you know, and talking about Tim Cook, that maybe the same thing could be said about an operational guru like Tim Cook. But
no, remember Jack Welch. I mean, he did okay, and he was an operations guy. So
true.
I think Cook's going to do just fine.
Well, you know, what was interesting, when we were up in Seattle, this the wedding was just a hair north of Redmond, and then the reception was in Redmond, and we went there, and my son also went to look at DigiPen, which is the second biggest video gaming school in the country, or in the world, I guess. And in fact, when we went through there, I said to my wife as we walked out, I go, you know what? I want to start all over. I want to go here. It was that awesome.
Did you take him to the Nintendo Company store in Redmond?
No, we did not, because we didn't have time. But here's the thing. That I didn't realize is there are 350 video gaming companies in the Seattle area. Yep. And
Nintendo and Xbox.
Yes. You know? And so, and one of the Nintendo senior executives is the one who started DigiPen. But anyway, the point is that I really gained a new appreciation of how ubiquitous Microsoft is in Seattle. When you drive around, you look at all the property they own, and every single condo in Redmond and Bellevue and Kirkland and every townhouse and everything else is all positioning, you know, within 10 minutes of Microsoft, within 5 minutes of Microsoft, close to the Microsoft connector, you know, blah, blah, blah. And if they go south, Seattle's going to really have a tough time. And not that that matters to technology overall, and that's just what happens, but anyway.
So predicting the end of Microsoft, it saw this piece from CNBC about the possibility that Google could disappear in 5 years. Google in trouble? Dun, dun, dun.
Well, you know, his whole thing, I mean, Google's been taking a lot of lumps in the past couple of days because their quarterly earnings were mistakenly released early and when the market was going before their call and all this stuff. So, they had to stop trading and it was, of course, not good news. So I think that sort of building off of this, and then they're saying that, oh, because Yahoo, who used to be at the top of the search heap, is no longer even in search, that's this, you know, we're going to see the same thing with Google. I don't see that
I don't either.
Because Yahoo was never really a search company, you know? It was a directory.
It was a directory index.
And they had search, and it was Google for a long time, you know?
Yeah.
I think it was Inktomi before that, and then it was Google. And then I think they're on Bing now or something like that. But anywho, their main business wasn't search like Google. So if search advertising goes away, then Google's in trouble. Well, but I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Search advertising is going to, the whole premise is that because mobile is the future of everything, that Google faces the same problem that Facebook faces, which is, being able to convert the advertising dollars into the mobile space. And, I just believe that the mobile advertising will evolve. We already know that mobile advertising tends to lead to more engagement by users. It's just a matter of figuring out where to place it and how to make it work.
I think that if the Eric Schmidt Google had not made the decision to do Android, that they would be in deep trouble right now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
Because Apple, I think they made that decision because, and I'm sure that they had discussions, because Schmidt was on the board of Apple at the time, that they needed, some deep integration with iOS, and Apple didn't want to do that. So they had to do Android. And if now they've got at least a platform to work with in mobile.
Well,
if they could only get mobile apps to pay as much or to bring them as much revenue as desktop ads do. That's the big problem.
That is the problem. Yeah. But then again, it's a matter of the medium changes and the advertising model has to change with it, and the expectations may be lower or different. So,
well, you remember the whole row about Apple's Siri being a front end to Google and how they could search anything in the back end because it didn't matter. That was the primary interface. And in this CNBC article talked about the best opportunity out there to displace Google in this area, meaning searching on mobile, is probably Apple's Siri. And when I saw that, I thought to myself, no, wait a minute. Voice is part of the operating system in iOS in terms of being able to, click the little microphone icon, even though that works online. But I was wondering if Google would be able to leverage that to have a voice front end to...
Well, they, they've had it built into Android since Gingerbread.
Yeah.
So they've had voice command, you know, the voice search way before Siri, at least a year and a half, 2 years before Siri arrived. So if you look at what they're doing now with Google now in Ice Cream Sandwich and Jelly Bean, it's, you know, it's very competitive, if not slightly ahead of Siri right now. Because the device learns about you and delivers you information based upon your behavior, where, you know, it's all tied in with your GPS, the location's a part of it, what you do during the day, your search activity, all that kind of stuff.
I've been well into all that. It's called proactive personal assistance as opposed to reactive, which is all Siri is now. But Google now, they came out with an early promise of a product that's pretty sketchy right now. But you can bet that Apple is working on this space behind the scenes. Just read what Scoble's writing about, you know, the new book that he and Shel Israel are cooking up called The Age of Context. And Scoble's been doing some really interesting posts on this. So you can bet that there's a lot coming out of Apple. And the claim by Scoble is that this is why Jobs bought Siri, you know, because he could see what was coming. And the voice reactive thing is just, you know, the beginning. There's a lot more under the covers coming.
Well, I'm waiting for the brain implants. All I have to do is think about where I want to go, and the phone will react.
Yep, it's crazy when you start looking at all the possibilities. Oh man!
So as a news junkie, we were going to talk about the future of journalism and the new Circa iOS app and the magazine from the guy that created Instapaper. And
he also co-founded a small site you might have heard of as well called Tumblr.
Yes.
So yes. He's not just some guy, you know.
Well, that's true. That's true. and so the magazine, I looked at that in newsstand on the iPad. And, I didn't sign up because I thought, you know, it's a 7-day free trial. It's $1.99 after that. It's not a big deal, but I get so much news in so many different places that I can't see what this is going to do for me to have a few article curation done. It just didn't seem that interesting. And then Circa looks really cool for the iPhone, but I don't use my news. I mean, I don't really spend a lot of time on news on my iPhone. I do it on my iPad. And, but I suppose people mobile.
I'm spending more time on my Android, using Flipboard there and, for news. And
really?
So, okay. Yeah, I actually am using that more than I thought I would. And, mainly because I always have my phone with me. I don't always have my iPad with me.
Right.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a nice app. I mean, Flipboard is very good on the iPhone. But Steve, of course, on our Retina display iPads, Circa looks fine. It looks wonderful. We can use it, the iPhone app on our iPads.
Yeah. Just at 2X.
At the 2X. Yeah.
Right. Right.
But, you know, I mean, they're claiming that, you know, they're killing the article and, you know, it's the end of the article. And, you know, I'm not really buying it. I mean, you know, first of all, it's a couple of guys that don't really come out of the journalism field, and to come out and say they're going to reinvent, you know, journalism is a little far-fetched. And Sarah Lacey at Pando Daily took a swing at that. And I'll put the link in the show notes, how she, you know, takes issue with what they're claiming. Although she says there are good things about it. But generally speaking, the tendency has been obviously towards shorter and shorter articles, quote unquote, for a long time, starting with USA Today. You know, this is nothing new.
Yeah.
But their claim that they're going to kill the article, ain't buying it. You know, and they got, basically it's a glorified news aggregation site. They got 12 editors that are sitting there deciding what you're going to see on Circa, you know. And I don't know, you know, I'll try it out, but I don't know about you, Steve, but I'm getting to the point where the news apps are getting to be too many. You know, it's like Flipboard kind of, you know, jumped in there first and took a huge share of the market. And, you know, Zeit, I still love Zeit, even though CNN bought them and hasn't ruined them yet.
Yeah.
Thank God. Let's hope. And yeah, News 360, I kind of like sometimes, but boy, it's hard to not like Flipboard and Zeit. And do I really need 4, 5, 6 of these things?
Well, no. That's the thing. The only thing about News 360 that I really like is, you know, like the Google discussion that we just had about Google being in trouble in their stock and all of that. The article that came up when I touched the article, it has tabs across the top, and it had, you know, CNBC, Forbes, Time, all these different publication. And then the last tab said 894 .. And so you could click that. There's 894 other articles about that same thing. And when you click on any of those tabs, you get an abstract, and then there's a little window with the actual website there. And so I'd say 80% of the time I'll touch the little window to pull up the actual site inside the browser. Mm-hmm. And so therefore the incentives are aligned with publishers to show all their ads and everything else and to see their site. And then, oh, there might be something else I click on, which happens probably at least a quarter of the time. And so that's what I keep looking at, is I keep looking at incentives that are aligned. And Flipboard's done such a great job because it is such an aesthetically beautiful delivery.
Oh,
and
it is.
And people, you know, organizations that are publishing are apparently doing special feeds for Flipboard because the ads are inserted directly in the feed. And they're doing something different, and I'm not exactly sure what it is, but sometimes you'll flip past a page with three columns on it, and there'll be a huge ad. And then you flip past the ad, and then the article continues. So they're doing something different with Flipboard. But again, the incentives are aligned. So I look at any of these apps that are just simply taking the feed, and they're useful and they're interesting. But if the incentives aren't aligned, it's not going to be a long-term play, I don't think.
Right. I agree. Yeah.
So
News 360 is doing some interesting things. And aren't they like a European company?
Russian.
Yeah, Russian of all. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who would have thunk, huh?
Yeah, it's a couple of young guys in their mid-20s in Russia that started this company. So
they must have quite a staff, though. I mean, they're curating stories. They must have quite an editorial staff. And I've been wondering how many of those might be in the U.S. I mean, I really don't think we're looking at European editors curating that, what goes up there, you know. That's my feeling, although I haven't drilled into it, you know.
I think all these news apps are sort of a flash in the pan, and we're going to all going back to terrestrial radio for news. Right,
that's right,
Phil?
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly what's going to happen.
Phil's out in front of that trend.
Yeah, he is. Everybody line up to watch radio.
Oh, man.
Sure, that'll happen, guys. I bet you that'll happen.
Well, I'll still come back to the fact, though, that the one thing that really, really troubles me out of everything that's happening with news, especially when you sit and watch the debate and, you know, you don't know who's right and what's real, you know, because any issue that you look into, you can listen to both sides and both of them are making really great points. And I don't even know what the truth is, you know, unless you dig. And so what I really miss is I miss investigative journalism. And, you know, we get some of that from various TV news sources. But again, you've got Fox on the right and you've got MSNBC on the left and you've got CNN arguably in the center.
I would say they're even further left.
Yeah, probably.
It depends on who the host is.
But then you've got all of the, you know, the current major news sources, you know, NBC, CBS, ABC. But I think it's harder and harder and harder and harder to really uncover the truth. So what is the truth versus what is interpretation? And so we can see all these different articles, and that's what I really appreciate about News 360, for example, because I want to look at multiple viewpoints. So after the debate, for example, I recorded Fox and watched MSNBC, and then when I was done with MSNBC, I went and watched the recording of Fox because I wanted to see both
sides.
Again,
where are you finding time to sleep? Where would you, you just watched it twice. But see, you're looking. But
no,
see,
not the whole thing. Just the 15 minutes afterwards.
Yeah. What you're talking about, you know, when you say you want to see, you know, different viewpoints. I mean, then that's. You're not really talking about news. You're talking about opinion. You know, really, news should be news. And that's confusion here. There are so many different outlets. And you get just a little bit different perspective on the news. And it speaks, I think, to a larger piece of journalism. Journalism was supposed to be about unbiased, you know, objective news reporting.
Yes,
and now we have so many different viewpoints that there is, you know, you can basically go to whatever outlet you want to get the news filtered the way you want to hear it.
Right. Well, and that's the big danger. And that's what I want to guard against, is that I don't want to simply look at a source that validates what I already think. Because if I need to have that friction. You know, in order to try to look at things from both sides, because regardless of who wins the election, roughly 50% or probably 49% of the electorate will be for the other guy. And so, you know, half the country thinks one way and half thinks the other way. And so as a consequence, I want to look at both sides. I want to consider both sides. I want to think about both sides. I want to understand kind of where people are coming from.
That's admirable. I think that's great. You know, and there should be more people like you. One thing I was going to say about News 360 though, do you have notifications turned on your phone?
No, I hate that.
Well, good, because their notifications are decidedly left-leaning.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I can't believe it. It's like, what the frick? You know, it's like, you know, shut these things off.
Really?
You know, like, I need that all day long, you know?
But Graham, that's the right view. So clearly that's the best thing that you should be getting. You should be getting those left-leaning things because you're clearly wrong being on the left.
What Steve's saying is the notification should be, you know, trying to, you know, show you the 360, and they're not.
Well, didn't we talk about we kind of briefly, I don't remember, we discussed it a lot on the podcast last, but I'm getting breaking news updates from the New York Times that are not breaking news. They're not breaking news. Breaking news. See our series on. It was like, you know, that's not breaking news, guys. And that's those sorts of notifications and updates are just plain wrong.
Notifications are out of control, you know. I mean,
well, that's why I just turn them off because I can't. Because here's what will happen. I'm sure this happens to you guys, too, is when you're totally focused on something, you know, like I had to write this report. And so I'm writing this report and I'm heads down and all of a sudden I get this, you know, this little notification on my phone and my iPad simultaneously.
You can change
the noise, you know. No. I know I can, but I'm the one who set it up. And then all of a sudden the notification shows up on my Mac like a nanosecond later. And so now I'm starting to pay attention to this reminder that I set. And it distracts me. And so it took me probably 10 minutes to kind of get back into the writing. And the same thing happens when, you know, you get all these notifications is that it's nothing but an interruption in my view. And you know what else? Can I rant for a second? Oh, my God. Oh, well, my God.
Why would we stop you now?
So, you know, we use RingCentral for our business. And so when we get a message, it comes as an email, but it also comes as a text message. In addition, I have the RingCentral app on my iPhone and my iPad. And I have a RingCentral soft phone on my Mac. So when a message is left, I have to deal with it on all three devices, you know, because it's sitting there, right?
Yep.
And all I can say is what I really want out of notifications is when I deal with something on one device, I want all the devices to know that I dealt with it.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Now we're getting into what this, you know, proactive personal assistant thing is about. It's about intelligent notifications.
Yes, here,
instead
here, Graham.
Of all these push notifications. They're yep. done. They're yesterday, you know.
Here, here.
Yep. That's where it's going.
Give and the governor a rump.
but it can't get there fast enough for me.
Yeah, Well, so what are we going to do? So what events are coming up this things are starting to slow down a little bit.
No, I don't know. I think we've got a lot going on. I think the She's Geeky is going on this weekend.
Yep.
At the Science Museum. Also, Product Camp.
Is in full swing at the University of St. Thomas, downtown Minneapolis. Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, have you guys ever gone to that?
Oh, yeah. It's good.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. I went to it last year. It's a darn good conference with great breakouts. They pulled 250, 300 people to that last year, as I recall.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I think people really want to know, not just so much about product marketing, but about the whole product management piece. And, you know, because when you talk about product management and you're looking at who's doing what, you know, you really need to be aware of what all your competitors are doing and, you know, what other alternatives are in the space, you know, so if your customers might be looking at something else,
That's a real science. And they pull people from the Fortune 500s and from the startup world to that event. Unfortunately, they always schedule it on a Gopher home game, or it's not a home game, I'm sorry. But it's hard to schedule on a Saturday in the fall when it's not either a Gopher home game or a Gopher away game.
Yeah.
Excuse me for bringing the Gophers up again, but I just can't help it. I just can't help it. They're starting the freshman quarterback today.
That's why there's TiVo. Come on. Get over it.
No, Graham goes down there. Graham goes to the stadium.
Don't listen to the news and just watch it later on TiVo.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll be on ESPNU at 11 a.m. watching those crazy drunken fans in Madison. 80,000 of them.
Wow.
Wailing all over us. The fans and their team.
Well, and our pals at Jamf Software are having their big user conference on starting on the 23rd.
These guys are on a roll. These guys are growing like 80% year on year. I mean, I don't even know how many employees they have now. This is going to be like a global user conference. They might have like 700 people there. They had to rent the Guthrie to do it.
40 sessions and multiple tracks. I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, look at the fact that, you know, any organization that rolls out any material number of phones and all of that. I mean, it's just amazing how tough that kind of stuff is to manage. I mean, I know what it's like. I have 6 machines that I manage for our business, and I use Apple Remote Desktop, and now I'm using LogMeIn. But I know what it's like when I've got to do updates and stuff, because I'm the only one that, you know, I'm the only one that can do it, but I'm the only one that wants to do it. And just imagine if you had, you know, 600 iPhones or 600 iPads.
iPads, yep.
You know, you need tools like what Jamf offers.
Oh, yeah. And so a lot of the sessions and a lot of the people coming to these things, they're doing it in the enterprise or they're doing it in education.
Education,
they have a very strong user base in higher education, right, Steve?
Exactly, exactly. Yep. Well, and when we went down to, I went down to a conference they had, or a rollout, I should say, of their new version.
Yeah, it was last year. I was there, too.
Yeah, that's right.
They had moved into their new space in the building next to... it's part of the grain exchange complex.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so they were talking about how they did approved workarounds to get books onto various devices. And it was very elegant and it was very nice. It was 3 steps. And, you know, so they're doing some really interesting things because otherwise you've got to be part of Apple's VIP program and there's all kinds of hoops you have to jump through and all of that. And a lot of schools and a lot of districts aren't going to do that because they're too small. Mm-hmm. And they had some very elegant very elegant workaround. So they're doing some pretty cool things.
And there were a ton of Apple people at that event, as I recall.
Right.
Yeah, many of whom you knew from your days with them. And, yeah.
Yep. Well, and then on the 25th, WordPress MSP, Tim, is there going to be anything even to talk about after WordUp?
Oh, there's always stuff to talk about.
Come on. Okay. All right. All right. And then SMB MSP on the 26th.
It's Bacon and Music, baby.
It's their big 50th, and I think we're going to try and do the podcast there, right, guys?
I think we are.
Yeah.
So, that'll be fun.
And it's about music. So it'll be interesting to be there. Tim Mahoney will be there, an artist. So
yeah,
it'll be fun.
Yep, you betcha. Won't miss that. Friday morning, the 26th.
And then what else have we got? Techni Awards coming up on the 1st, Startup Weekend on the 2nd of November, MobCon the middle of the month. Don't forget, Minovate Pals is your discount code password. I think that's still being accepted. And then it looks like we've got the Code Slingers Challenge slated for the 16th and 17th at Fusion Room.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that should be fantastic.
Sort of like the overnight website challenge, but for
coders.
Writing.
Coders.
Yeah.
So right. Who's behind that one? Who's running that one, or who organized it?
It's at the Fusion Room. I don't know. This is like the second or third year they've done this, as I recall. So there's more at the website, but it's Fusion Room and the Shine Box are the two sponsors. So I think, it says organizer, Fusion Room. So,
oh, yeah, and that's over here in Bloomington, over near 494 and 100.
Yep.
Yep.
Cool.
Yep, they're kind of a nerdery, son of nerdery kind of an operation. But they have, I think, like 100 and some people over there.
Yeah, they're actually in Edina, but they're...
Well, I said Bloomington is right on the border. Yeah, you know, they're on the east side of Highway 100, where the old Park Tavern used to be. They're in the old Park Tavern building, if you remember that.
Yeah. Well, and there's also...
Stone's Throw from the Vikings.
There's also a Minnesota PHP group going on. I'll find that and put that into the show notes. But that's going to be at the Nerdery on November 1st. And what I find interesting about that is that it looks like Code Slingers, you know, they're talking about bring your CMS of choice or your coding of choice and all of that. And it seems like PHP is really accelerating. Mm-hmm. As a language. I mean, it's even something that I've written a little bit, and I'm not a coder by any stretch of the imagination. So
if you're doing it, then it must really be.
Yeah, it must really be simple. Thanks. Thanks,
Graham. What's funny is that Ruby isn't really mentioned, and that was the language that was so hot there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, isn't but Ruby is PHP.
Yes, it is, but
yeah,
it came from it, sort of grew out of it.
Yeah, yeah, it's basically object-oriented PHP.
Okay,
so yep,
I'll have to remember that for my next cocktail reception.
when Ruby comes up.
Yeah, when Ruby.
Oh, I know.
Yeah,
did you know that it was?
All right, thank you.
I would Wikipedia that before you do that, Grandma.
Yes,
just to make sure.
I always do that on my iPhone before I bring something up at a cocktail reception. No,
yeah. And then the Techni Awards from our pals at the...
Yeah, Phil said that.
Oh, Phil mentioned that.
Is there an echo in here?
Hello? Very slow echo. Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
The whole list. Phil went through the whole list. We were talking about Code Slingers at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the middle of November, so I think we're done.
Okay.
Yeah, we're done until Thanksgiving. And anybody that's planning an event on Thanksgiving weekend, I'd advise you against that. Because
I think we're going to go into a slow period.
Yeah,
I think so.
Wait a minute. Mobile March will be the 21st of March next year.
What? Oh. That's not even in December, though.
Just saying, I just came to me. I remember we booked the location, which we'll have details on and that sort of thing. So I'm sorry, just leave that in there. I realized that.
So. Yeah.
So when you're planning your Caribbean vacation on your Kickstarter money, don't do it March 21st.
March 21st.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Oh, Lord. All right, boys.
That's great. It's another week. So thanks very much for joining us on
the Minovate Gang Podcast.
See you later.
Take care.